Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday morning. It's December 11th. Currently 34 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. Heber City reporting 31 degrees again with sunshine. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Noah Price. Good morning.
Good morning, KPCW listeners. Here's today's weather for the Wasatch Back heading into the morning hours. Should see those temperatures warming up into the upper 40s and low 50s. We'll be seeing plenty of sunshine, very little in the way of cloud cover. Should just see a few clouds, light winds around 5 to 10 miles an hour. And then as we head into the overnight hours, we'll see a few clouds, but we'll see those temperatures cooling off into the upper 20s and the low 30s into Park City. We should see a low temperature of around 31 degrees. But then as we head into Friday to end off your work week, we'll be seeing lots of sunshine once again, looking at that high temperature of around 50 degrees, but into the upper 40s for most of us along the Wasatch Back. And then into Friday night, again, mostly clear skies, temperatures, they'll be into the upper 20s. Winds will be light and variable, but going into your weekend, more warmer temperatures and drier conditions, looking at very little in the way of any precipitation as the next 6 to 10 days call for above average temperatures and below average precipitation, but calm winds for Saturday, lots of sunshine, and we should see those temperatures warming up into the upper 40s and the low 50s, looking at a high of around 50 degrees. But then into Saturday night, cloud cover does increase going into Saturday night and for Sunday. Not looking at anything in the way of any precipitation, as we should still see those low temperatures dipping down just below freezing, but into Sunday, looking at mostly sunny skies and a high of just around 52 degrees as we head into next week. Lots of sunshine to start out your work week with a high of 50 degrees. And then we'll see some slight chances for rain, snow mix, some snow showers into those higher elevations. Temperatures will cool off just slightly into the mid to low 40s. And we'll see those wind speeds begin to increase. And from the ABC Forecast Center, I am meteorologist Noah Price.
And with a look in the backcountry and the fun with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, I've got Drew Hardesty. Good morning, Drew.
Once again, Leslie, there are times that try avalanche forecasters, and these are some of those times. And I'll even start by saying that there are times as well when I'll say that it's a snowpack only a mother could love, but I even have my doubts currently. I mean, there's a breakable and rugged melt-freeze crust on nearly all aspects and elevations, except for the high north, and even those high northerly aspects have wind-damaged snow. So it's going to be a while before things shift around for us. Those crusts, of course, will soften with daytime warming, which leads us to my next headache, which is forecasting for wet avalanches in mid-December. I anticipate that we're going to be seeing wet avalanches probably starting today at some extent, but certainly over the weekend, as we're not really even going to have a good refreeze probably until next week. But with skyrocketing temperatures, Leslie, I'm looking at temperatures being what I would say plus 6 centigrade as free air temperatures over the weekend. It's going to be just skyrocketing out there and sweltering. So wet, loose avalanches, even possibly wet slab avalanches, are going to be on the radar in the coming days. These are difficult to forecast in spring, much less mid-December, but over and above our persistent weak layer have described on west, north, and east aspects, the wet avalanches should certainly be on the menu in the coming days. It's just a head-scratcher and troubling, to say the least, and I would encourage the listeners to go to the website, UtahAvalancheCenter.org to see what the situation is.
Okay. Any outlook, though, for some change anytime soon?
I mean, we just heard it from your meteorologist. I mean, my take, Leslie, is that the ridge of high pressure is likely going to get squashed down next week, allowing for more activity to be moving in from the west, which is a positive sign. I've sort of got my eyes set on the solstice for when we start to see more of an active weather pattern. So we're just going to wait and see. In the meantime, get out the Hawaiian shirts and the sunscreen, and we're going to be worried about wet avalanches in the coming days.
Okay, Drew, thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie.
A very busy morning this morning. From Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson, we'll take a look at yesterday's meeting. Later on, Park Silly Sunday Executive Director Kate McChesney with details on this weekend's Silly Holiday Bazaar. From the Park City Singers, Artistic Director Darla Caldwell, along with singer Mary Gutchess, with details about this year's two concerts. And from the new Thanes Hotel, General Manager Tom Underwood talks about the grand reopening of the former Park City Peaks Hotel. Finally, from the Timpanogos Valley Theater, I'll have actor and board member Gary Harder with details on this season's production of Miracle on 34th Street. And on the phone with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
Let's see. Let's start with the Basin Recreation tax increase. After an hour more discussion on that proposed tax increase, County Council voted 4-1 to approve a reduced tax increase. Was Canna still the lone holdout on that?
I think it was actually Tanya.
Okay. All right, so the district wanted 15%. The council gave them a 5% increase. You initially had proposed 10%. Can you break down the numbers about how you got to them?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you have to look at the backdrop of all the, we call it tax, property tax fatigue that our citizens have experienced. This tax... maybe in a vacuum wouldn't have been a big deal at 15% or $50 per $1 million of primary residential value. But against that backdrop, it was sort of getting to the point where it's the final straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back. I went through and looked at what inflation had been since their last tax increase, which was effective as of the 1st of January in 2023, and that added up to about 6.5% inflation to date, cumulative, you know, like almost 3% plus or minus each year. And so I was wanting to at least give them that and recognize that there was maybe in Summit County a greater rate of inflation because, you know, that's sort of anecdotally what you hear. So I was suggesting 10%, but, you know, they do have, their purchasing power has decreased. You could nitpick back and forth whether their choices for how they wanted to spend the money were right or not, but that's really hard to do. So I think that we lit on a pretty good place. We'd heard from a lot of, you know, I don't, it's all relative, right, but I had heard from several people that I respect saying, hey, you know, we're just getting pretty tired of this. And so anyway, that there was a lot of debate back and forth, but I think we hit on a good place and they were happy enough with it.
All right. So how much of Basin Rec's budget proposal was impacted by plans for a new field house that could be built there and that Klein Dolly parcel?
Well, I don't think any of it really right now. I mean, it's so in such early stages. Certainly not for their 2026 budget.
Yeah, now you.
That's what I was trying to say when, you know, don't blame this on our Klein Dolly proposal. That's a ways out, but I don't think much of it, if any.
Yeah, well, you're concerned about whether Basin Rec will bond for that new building. My guess is that they'll have to. No.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the broader picture. If you zoom out, you know, you could. Win a battle and lose the war, so to speak, the big picture is they are going to have other needs, bigger needs than this, and keeping that in mind.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to the county budget. The council approved a $100 million budget for county government with no property tax increase. The budget's bigger, but revenues are also up. Council member Roger Armstrong has been vocal the past couple of weeks that the budget should not grow as fast as it has. So what does appropriate growth look like to you?
Well, I guess it looks like what we did in a nutshell, but the new sort of paradigm that we have is that the legislature's authorized some sales taxes, which are not on unprepared food. They're not on gasoline. They're not on automobiles and, you know, things like that. They're mostly paid by parties out, you know, visitors. And they're a consumption tax, which means they're somewhat elective, since you carve out food and these other things that are, you know, we all need to eat, so that's less elective, right? And so with the emergency services sales tax, which was, I think it's 0.5% that was approved last year, it's given us a extra revenue that we can buttress public safety, search and rescue, landfill, other things. And if you'll recall, which probably nobody does, but a year ago, we had scheduled truth in taxation, but didn't really want to do it. But we put it on the agenda pending the outcome of the election on this emergency services sales tax. And that should, that taxing stream of the sales tax should allow us to have more without some of the hurt that the property tax provides or causes.
So how much of the 2026 budget is for land acquisition, like the rent that the council's paying for the 910 cattle ranch or any expenses related to your ranch?
I don't think that the operating budget, those are capital items, and I can't tell you exactly. I mean, I know the amounts that we need to pay for those. You know that the 910 cattle ranch, where we owe about $40 million left, and we're trying to bring across the finish line a Forest Legacy grant in the same amount. I believe we're going to close the year ranch next week, and so it's none of it's in the 2026 budget. Maybe I'm missing your question. The capital costs are, as I just described, if you're asking what operating costs are in there, I couldn't tell you offhand.
Okay.
In next year's budget.
Where did the council fall with regard to council pay? It sounded like some council members may be strapped just because of the intense time commitment that being on the council requires.
You know, we approved a 2.7% COLA and a 3% merit for all county employees, and including the elected officials, but did not finalize the council's compensation, like the five of us. I'm advocating for about a $70,000 figure, which is in 2025, we earned, other than the chair, which gets a little bit more, about $61,000, and so this would be a $9,000 increase, which about half of it would be made up of, a little less than half of the COLA and merit anyway. But the idea is, or what was proposed as a rule of thumb, is about half of the elected's compensation, which is some $158,163, as I recall, and that would be some $79,000, but getting there over a phased approach. So I think it'll likely land around $70,000.
Okay, and that's what was approved, because you did...
We didn't actually approve it. I think that there was on what we... Well, I guess we did. That's actually in the budget. We approved that. You're right.
Okay.
You're right. That somehow, I didn't, yeah.
Okay.
That's what Shane had put in just as a placeholder, and that's kind of where we, by another means, gravitated to.
All right. Regarding North Summit Fire District, the council decided not to go through with a proposed tax increase this year. Fire Chief Nielsen says that they will need a tax increase next year. They're apparently just one payroll away from maxing out this year's budget and dipping into savings. So are you concerned about that tight margin?
Yeah, my thought is that it's sort of a tale of two counties in a way. We have the west side that has this huge tax base, a tiny bit of levy goes a long way. We can afford a fire district like none other. And North Summit has a very small tax base, relatively speaking, and we had to make a huge increase a few years ago, as has been reported. And I think we may need to look more at providing some additional funding from something like the emergency services sales tax, is what I'm thinking. That even the tax, it was only going to raise $100,000, and you know, and which is not a lot of money. I know that sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot. It's a lot to North Summit Fire District, but I think we need to find another way to help that district, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, especially given the public concern, I'm guessing, that the North Summit Board of Education is pursuing bonding on a new high school, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big lift for that school district.
Okay.
It's a huge lift.
Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think that about covers it. Thanks a lot.
Okay. That's Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. The annual Park City Winter Holiday Bazaar returns this weekend, and on the phone to tell us more, I have the Executive Director of the Silly Sunday Market, Kate McChesney, which puts on the Holiday Bazaar. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. So tell us when and where this year.
So we're kicking off tomorrow night at the Doubletree Yarrow, which is right smack in the center on the corner of Park Avenue and Kearns. It's where we've been for the past few years. We'll kick off tomorrow night. We open at 5 o'clock till 9 p.m. and then Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. till 5.
Okay. How many vendors are you going to have there?
We're going to have 80 vendors. We've got a lot of local Park City, a lot of Wasatch back in Heber, tons of Eastside, Camas, everything from potters and jewelers, photographers. We've got baked goods, chocolate goods, lots of art. And the great thing is all of our vendors will be present, so you can talk to them, hear their story, you know, see why their gifts are so important to you and your family and friends.
Okay. And it's free. Just show up?
It is free. Yeah, totally free. Free parking, unbelievable parking. There's also a restaurant on site, bar on site, coffee shop on site, as well as we'll have free photos with St. Nick, little St. Nick, which is, we like to call him our hot buff Santa. And he'll be there the whole weekend. So anytime we're open, St. Nick will be there. So you can just bring your own camera, snap some pictures for you and your family, get your Christmas cards together. And yeah, it's going to be a beautiful weekend, as you know. Unfortunately, no snow, but it's good for shopping. I like to say it's a very good shopping weather.
Yeah. So in addition to the free photos, anything else specifically for kids to do?
So we'll have some balloon tires that are going to be coming. We've also got Nuzzles joining us. I know for a fact Nuzzles is joining us tomorrow night from 6 to 8, so you can do some puppy snuggles. They will be there Saturday and Sunday, but they haven't given me their official hours yet because I know they have another big adoption happening. But there will be some really fun stuff for kids. And also just to peruse, you know, bring the kids to peruse to do some light shopping for mom and dad.
Mm-hmm. Any entertainment or just kind of music in the back?
No energy. Yeah, just some music in the back. We've tried to do entertainment. It just gets too loud because we're all socked in there. So we just do some nice house music with some holiday songs on there.
Okay. And how many of the vendors participating in the Winter Bazaar are those that we've kind of seen over the summer on Main Street?
We have a 60-40. So a lot of times we use the Holiday Bazaar to also kind of judge and jury some of the people that will apply in the summer, because it's really hard, really, when you have so many vendors apply. We have over 800 applications that happen in the summer. It's hard to just kind of look through the pictures. So some people that might not have gotten into the summer, we'll invite them for the winter so we can really see who they are, what they are, what their story is, what they're selling in person. So we have about a 60-40 mix of 60% you have seen at the summer show and then 40% are new.
Okay. Do you get a break at all, or you just jump right into planning next summer's market?
Next summer's market will kick off the application December 15th, so we let this one happen so the applications aren't too confusing. So December 15th, we'll kick off our summer application, and then that'll close somewhere around March, April. But yeah, I mean, we're always planning. I mean, we're always looking for sponsors. We're always out. You know, I'm even going to all these smaller markets around the state, or even around just, you know, our local jurisdiction, looking for new vendors, kind of seeing what new blood is out there. And we've got some youths happening this season as well, which, you know, the youth vendors or kidpreneurs, as we like to call them, it's a real big target market for us. So, you know, we're just out there scouting and scouring, trying to help children and adults' dreams come true with their passion of being an entrepreneur.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about the Winter Holiday Bazaar?
No, just hope to see you this weekend. And thank you so much. I really appreciate you reaching out, Leslie, as usual. We're very excited to work with KPZW.
Okay. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks. Have a good day. Bye.
Kate McChesney is the executive director of the Park Silly Sunday Market. Again, the Silly Winter Holiday Bazaar returns this weekend at the Doubletree Yarrow, Friday 5 to 9, Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 5. The Park City Singers preparing for their annual holiday concerts in the studio. To tell us more, I have the Singers musical director, Darla Caldwell, along with singer Mary Gutches. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, so... Mary, two concerts, when and where?
Oh, we're so excited to share the news that our concerts are tomorrow night and Saturday night. That's December 12th and 13th at the Park City Community Church. Our concerts start at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. And tickets are available either at the door and even more easily at our parkcitysingers.org website.
Okay. You used to spread these out. Is it just easier to... dig them down and let the singers enjoy their holidays?
Yes.
Two shows back to back.
Yeah. Okay, how many singers do you have this?
We have about 60 singers this year.
Okay.
So it's a nice large group. We've been working really hard. We're very excited to present to everybody what we've been doing.
Okay, so you recruited last fall. It sounds like a full choir then.
It's a wonderful group.
Okay, and you've been practicing for how long?
For a couple months now, since September, and 2 hours a week is all we've done, and we have an amazing program. We even have some instrumentalists who are part of the group as singers, and they have shared their talents for this concert. It's going to be a real treat.
Yeah, like what? What instruments are you talking about?
Well, we have a harp on one of our pieces. I'd kind of like you to be surprised and just come. But we do have a clarinetist, and we have some moments planned in this show. It's going to feel a bit more maybe like a show rather than a concert per se. So we've got some exciting moments with some engagement for all of you that join us as well.
Tell us about some of the selections you'll be performing.
Well, we've got some holiday classics that are going to be familiar. We have some multicultural pieces that may be new to you. We've got a beautiful Spanish Renaissance piece that celebrates the Nativity in a very joyful, dance-like manner. And, we've got some beautiful harmonious pieces that by contemporary composer Eric Whitaker. So if you know his work, we're going to be doing Glow, which is a new piece for us this year.
So, Darla, do you choose all the music, or is it kind of done by committee?
Well, I did choose all the music this year, thank you. And with the support of our wonderful board, I did choose, this concert is entitled Songs of Light and Wonder. So I did have a theme and an intention with the pieces that I selected, and I wanted to make sure that I include global music.
All right.
Well,
so we have a really nice Hanukkah song that's one of those hand-clapping fun songs.
It's going to be a hoot. Yeah. We want you all to come.
Mm-hmm. Mary, how difficult was it to learn the songs chosen for you this year?
You know, we work hard, and because we're a non-audition community choir, we have a great variety of skill levels with singing. We have people that have been singing their whole lives and play other instruments and are excellent musicians. And we have some people that, have a trouble reading music, and they learn their music other ways. So we work hard. I play piano. It helps me learn the music. I've been in the choir for about 18 years, and it's really something that gives me great joy to participate in.
We had a lot of support from our wonderful pianist Yi Fong Go as well. So we really structured the rehearsals to break up our 2 hours together. We had sectionals, So we were able to work with sopranos and altos and the tenors and basses and then come together, you know, for the last parts of the rehearsal and really get it done. So I have been incredibly inspired by the focus, the energy, the commitment of all of the singers this season. Again, we have planned our work and worked our plan, and we are ready. We are ready for Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. You mentioned 18 years, Mira. I know you've got people that have been there like almost 30.
You know, our choir started in 1995, which is 30 years ago, and we have a couple singers who have been in the choir the entire time. And they bring such a great wealth of historical, you know, knowledge and how we've done things for 30 years.
Yeah, and it's just fun for them, huh?
It's just fun for all of us. I mean, people that love to sing, love to sing. And I think most of us who love to sing are happy to have the Park City Singers available to us as our place to sing.
Yeah, and we stand on a good legacy of directors prior to my taking this role this year. We've, you know, Deborah Cook and Shelley Jennings and Joe Demers. It's a wonderful legacy that we're continuing here in Park City, and we want to really invite everyone. If you're interested, if you come and you hear us sing and you think that you might want to join us, check us out at parkcitysingers.org so you can get connected in. There's possibility of something happening in the spring, and if not then, we start rehearsals in September for the following season.
Okay. How much time is put into this? A couple hours every week?
Every Tuesday. Yeah, we rehearse every Tuesday evening for 2 hours, starting right after Labor Day. And we make it happen.
Yeah, and how about for you? Because you probably spend a little bit more time, darling.
Oh, I've spent hours and hours and hours. It's been my absolute pleasure. There's so much that goes on behind the scene, from the programming to the staging to the engaging singers to making sure that everyone feels supported. You know, it's just been a wonderful, wonderful, energy-packed couple of months.
Okay. Get you in the spirit. Again, parkcitysingers.org for tickets. How much are they?
They're $20 for adults and $5 for kids.
Okay. Or at the door?
At the door, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And we want to thank Park City Community Church and Pastor Sam so much for welcoming us into this space, always.
Okay. Anything else?
Thank you so much, Leslie, for having us.
You bet. Darla Caldwell.
Caldwell, thank you.
Caldwell.
Thank you.
Mary Gutches, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Hotel Thane's making its debut after a major renovation of the former Peaks Hotel. In the studio with details, I have General Manager Tom Underwood. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so why the name change? I mean, I guess properties are kind of identified by what people know.
Yeah, and Thames was derived from the historic Thames mineshaft in Park City, which then became obviously the Thames chairlift. So that's really where the name came from. And really the hotel's, you know, had a significant reinvestment. We closed for several months. We've just reopened this week, and we've joined the Marriott portfolio of hotels. And it's just kind of a rebirth of a hotel that's been part of the community for quite a while now.
Yeah. So were there new owners that did this?
There was an ownership change several years ago. The renovation started in the last year. You know, we've been closed since June, July, and just reopened this week. And really, the renovation has really been top to bottom. I mean, everything is completely new, renovated, all new furniture, fixtures, anything that really could be upgraded, updated, and replaced has been. So it's really is a brand new hotel.
Oh, wow. Okay. And in terms of the rooms stayed the same, basically, the size and...
Yeah, the size of the room is the same, but everything inside the room is completely brand new, from carpet to wall vinyl to fixtures, furniture, bedding. The bathrooms have been completely redone, so it is a brand new hotel. Corridors. We have added some meeting space. For those familiar with the property, we've added a pavilion kind of in our courtyard area on the backside of the hotel. So that pavilion is to be used for catering events. There's a lot of outdoor space that's been added and upgraded. So yeah, that's probably the big add to the hotel, other than updating and upgrading the existing facility.
Can you give us a price tag on those renovations?
Man, I really can't comment specifically on the number, but I would say it's a very significant investment.
Multi-million?
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. And we're talking about how many rooms?
We've got 128 rooms, several thousand square feet of meeting space, and a lot of several thousand square feet of outdoor event space that, you know, three seasons out of four will be very of great interest to our clients. So.
Okay. I noted when I looked it up, it was listed as a three-star hotel. Does that go up now based on the renovations?
Yeah, and we haven't gone through that process yet, but it would definitely fall more into the four-star range once the dust has settled here and we've kind of applied for that reevaluation. So, yeah.
Okay. And so what trends are there in hotel rooms? I mean, there's not a lot, I guess, you can do besides adding a fridge and a microwave, or is there?
A lot of it comes down to the service, and really I think where we've kind of the sweet spot that we found, you know, we've joined the Marriott portfolio, and the Marriott brand that we are a part of it's called the Tribute portfolio. There's about 90 Tribute portfolios in the brand, and really it's somewhat of a boutique style. It's, you know, and the benefit of the brand is you're part of the Marriott family of brands. But the Tribute portfolio, which Hotel Thames is a part of, is very individualistic. And wherever there's a Tribute portfolio hotel, it really tries to take on the feel of the community that it is in. So it's not a large kind of convention type hotel that you're going to find in that Tribute brand, but it's one that really takes on the community and really the surroundings that it's located in.
Yeah. And do you still have kind of that cool indoor-outdoor pool?
We do. It still exists. It's been significantly upgraded. We've got two hot tubs, one large outdoor hot tub, one indoor hot tub. We've got an indoor-outdoor pool that, you know, has a divider during the cold that you can swim under. But that entire area has been redone. We've added outdoor fireplaces, outdoor fire pits, outdoor barbecue grill area. So it's a very upgraded area. So it's great.
Yeah. So what about the Versante restaurant and bar inside? Does that stay?
Yeah, so, and I'm kind of new to the community, but I quickly found out that that's a fan favorite in Park City. So Versante has stayed open while the hotel was closed for the last several months and continues to do well. This concept has stayed the same. It's very similar. We've certainly done a few upgrades along the way, but for the most part, Versante, the restaurant bar area, has remained, as everyone here in the community knows it, as it has been prior to our renovations.
Okay. So the start of the ski season, not looking great at this point. How are things looking ahead for you? And I guess it's like, will people even be able to find you given the name change?
Yeah. So business looks good. Obviously, we're all praying for snow. I think everybody in town is, obviously. So, but I do think the weather has probably done us a little bit of a favor because it really allowed us to tighten up and finish some construction stuff, which if we had a lot of snow and melt and stuff that happens, probably would have made it a little bit messier. But bookings look great. So we do pick up, we just opened this week. We do pick up, you know, the week of Christmas, as I'm sure most do. And we look really strong occupancy straight through the end of March for the most part. As is the trend in the area, I'm sure. But I think, you know, the benefit to us compared to historically is that we are now part of the Marriott brand. So obviously, you know, we've got a lot of bookings that are generated from Marriott loyal travelers through the website, through the different channels. It's a brand that everybody really knows and love and enjoy and travel to when they're on business and pleasure. So I think that benefits us significantly compared to not having the brand previously. So I don't think there's a concern with that. I think it's obviously there's a little bit of a holding pattern based off the current snow levels and the weather forecast, but I'm sure once it starts snowing, hopefully it won't stop for a while. So,
okay, Tom, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we're really excited to reopen. You know, the hotel's been part of the community for quite a while. We've brought back a lot of our staff that was with the hotel before it closed earlier in the summer. We love being part of this community. You can feel the vibe in town. It's a great location. We do have, obviously, shuttle service that's, you know, goes to Deer Valley, comes to downtown in the evenings, and goes to Park City Mountain each day. We've got new updated meeting space and event space that we're excited to show off to the community. So we'd love everybody to keep us in mind if they're looking for overnight accommodations or for events or social gatherings or just a night out on the town. We'd love everybody to keep us in mind.
So, okay. Tom, thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Tom Underwood, again, is the general manager of the new Hotel Thames. Timpanogos Valley Theater will produce the holiday classic Miracle on 34th Street, a live radio play this month. On the phone with details, I have a member of the cast who also serves on the board of directors for the theater, Gary Harder. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be with you this morning.
Thank you. Well, for those who may not remember, tell us about the story of the Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah, right. It is really a classical Christmas tale of magic and hope, centered around the Macy's Parade, Macy's and Gimbel's department stores in New York City back in the 40s, and a little disbelief that there is or is not a Santa Claus overall. And we grow through the story to the end, and it really has a lot of hope, and there's a great line in it from Doris, who works at Macy's, and she says, faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to. And what a great message for this time of the year.
So how does a live radio play differ from a regular production?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. This is the fifth year that we've done it. We've done the first four years, we've done It's a Wonderful Life, and we also did Christmas Carol. And what happens is there's a set on stage right now that resembles a 1940s radio show. And there's microphones on stage, and the actors come up, and they voice various characters that are in the performance throughout. And in previous years, this is my fifth year that I've done it. In previous years, I have been able to do four, five, six different voices at the different microphones we have. Now, this year, as you mentioned, I'm in it, and I'm playing only one voice this year. I'm playing Kris Kringle. This year. So I only have one voice, but some of our actors have multiple voices that they do. We have a group of Foley artists like they did in the 40s. They do all the sound effects. And then we have some songs and things that we sing through the entire play as well. It's a lot of fun. The studio audience, they interact with us, and we have lights that flash applause and on air as they did when they did the radios back in the 40s. That was the primary way that people got their entertainment and got their information as well.
Yeah. How many do you have in the cast? Any idea?
There's about eight of us all together in the cast. Maybe a few more, nine or ten when we count the Foley artists in as well. And some of them are return. They've done some of the plays with us before, and some of them are brand new, the first time that they've done the radio play with us. We're going to be doing six performances. We open tomorrow evening, Friday the 12th, and we run through Saturday the 20th. And so we do Friday, Saturday, both weekends, and then Monday and Wednesday of this coming week as well. The performances start at 7 o'clock at our theater in Heber City. And it's a lot of fun. We're just on 100 West, on right at 90th North, right in this downtown area of Heber City, right behind City Offices building. And our building's been there since the early 1900s, and we occupied the building. It's a city-owned building, and we came into it in 2010 and been in there ever since, and tremendous performances, a lot of fun. We are truly a community theater.
All right, tickets are how much and available where?
Tickets, you can get them on our website, timpvalleytheater.com. That's timpvalleytheater.com, and the prices for our tickets are $16 for our premier reserve seating, which is in the front two rows. General admission is $12 for adults and $10 for children overall. And we do plays and performances throughout the entire year. We're going to be coming up and doing, once we close on this, we're getting ready for a couple of our youth theater performances that'll be in March and April this year. We're doing Sister Act Junior and Singing in the Rain Junior for those. And folks, if they're interested in participating, can go to that same website and find out about auditions. We have a Belvedere's comedy improv group that typically is most second Saturdays of every month with us. And the big one we're looking forward to this next summer, we're going to be doing 1776. It's the 250th anniversary of our nation. And in partnership with the city, we're going to be doing 1776. It'll open in mid-June, and it'll go, we're actually going to close on 4th of July. What a tremendous play to be able to do as well. But I got to tell you, Leslie, I'm really looking forward to our opening nights. They're always exciting. Tomorrow night, we have a wonderful cast that's putting on our miracle on 34th Street. And we encourage folks to come on by. Your whole experience is about an hour and 45 minutes, somewhere in that ballpark, with it. And so it gives you that great, great message this time of the year as well.
Okay. Gary, anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, we really appreciate all the support that we get here in a community theater. We're all volunteers who do it. We appreciate the opportunity for us to learn and grow and perform and entertain on stage as well. We've been in existence 20 years now, and we really appreciate the partnerships with the city for being in this facility, in this building that we've been in now for these 15 years. And if you haven't been in the building lately, you haven't seen a lot of the improvements that we've done. So come on over to Tempe Valley Theater starting tomorrow night through next Saturday and enjoy the performance of your neighbors and your friends for Miracle on 34th Street.
Okay. Gary Harder, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Park City Transit is celebrating its 50th birthday this year. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports on the agency that's been offering free rides to locals and visitors since the 1970s.
Park City leaders hopped aboard the trolley Wednesday morning for a festive ride around Old Town. The ride honoring 50 years of Park City Transit featured the trolley decked out in tinsel and driven by Santa Claus himself. Since Park City Transit's inception in 1975, buses have been fare-free. Now, the transit system includes a dozen routes and carries an average of 2 million riders per year. During the trolley ride, Mayor Nan Worrell said Park City's robust public transportation network is part of what makes the town special.
Park City Transit began in the 70s as a practical solution for a mountain town, but it quickly became something more. Choosing free public transit was a statement of values: access over congestion, community over convenience, and long-term thinking over short-term fixes.
She thanked the city's dozens of bus drivers for getting people to their destinations no matter the weather, patiently navigating through peak seasons, and welcoming every visitor to town.
I'm always amused when I'm on the bus and I hear visitors asking the bus driver, like they're the bus concierge, of where they should have dinner, where they should go, where they should take their children. And so these folks are more than just drivers. They are beautiful representatives of Park City.
The city's transit manager, Bill DeGroot, said Park City Transit has more than 100 drivers on staff during the busy winter months. In summer, there are around 60 drivers. He says Park City is committed to offering transportation almost around the clock.
A lot of services in resort towns kind of close with the resort. We continue to run, so in the wintertime, we're now up to 22 and a half hours of service. Whoa. And so it's really about the continual movement of people around town to give them a legitimate option not to drive.
DeGroot says the transit system is also working hard to ensure buses are accessible to all.
We have about 20 drivers now that speak multiple languages. We're trying to be a reflection of our community and the visitors to our community.
Park City Transit also has door-to-door services available for riders with mobility disabilities who can't use the fixed route bus service and for people over 65. The town's beloved trolley arrived on Main Street in 1985. The 2002 Olympics prompted the city to create the first routes from Kimball Junction to Old Town. In 2021, High Valley Transit joined the regional transportation network. Its buses are also free and mostly serve unincorporated Summit County. Connections are also available to Heber City and Salt Lake City. For more information about bus routes in Park City, visit kpcw.org. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And Park City will launch its winter shuttle service to Bonanza Flat starting December 19th. The shuttle will run Fridays through Sundays from 8:45 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. through April 19th, weather permitting. Shuttle riders can board at Empire Canyon Lodge, which is accessible via the 9 Purple Bus from the Old Town Transit Center and comes every 30 minutes. The shuttle accommodates up to 11 riders, 4 fat tire bikes, cross-country ski gear, and snowshoes. Dogs are allowed with muzzles. Park City Transit's full winter bus routes increased service on the number 1 red, 2 green, and 3 blue routes and began at Ski Resort Express buses December 7th. Also this winter, Park City citywide late-night bus begins at 11:40 p.m. and takes riders from the Snow Park Lodge to the Park City Mark every 30 minutes until just after 2 a.m. In Summit County, High Valley Transit's 109 Snowball Express began taking riders and skiers from the Eckrey Hill Park and Ride to Park City Mountain with just one stop at Canyons Village on December 7th. Park City and High Valley Transit buses are free 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Well, the 2026 Sundance Film Festival has unveiled its curated film lineup for what will be the final year of the festival in Park City. The festival's traditional sections remain intact, and a special focus will highlight founder Robert Redford's legacy. Out of 16,000 submissions, 105 film projects will screen at next month's festival. Senior programmer and director of strategic initiatives John Nine says the number is consistent with recent years, although still fewer than pre-pandemic totals. Two films have Utah ties. One is the world premiere of the documentary The Lake. It examines an environmental threat looming over Utah and the race to avert a potential catastrophe.
It's a fascinating film, and I think, you know, what it does a really great job of, and I hope that as we always look for these films to start a conversation, it does a great job of bringing out the complexity of all of this and that there's no easy solution.
Another Utah documentary, Cookie Queens, dives into the world of Girl Scout cookies.
And it's really incredible. You will not be shocked to learn that these kids are adorable. But what I think what's really incredible is that you also see how entrepreneurial they are, how self-aware they are, even as so far as to reflect on the nature of ambition itself with like real maturity for quite young people.
While Sundance is known for films tackling challenging themes, Nine says comedy plays a prominent role in the 2026 lineup.
What's really, I think, amazing is that some of these comedies are dealing with really uneasy subject matter, difficult subject matter, even, you know, in some cases, loss and grief in a really funny way.
And the festival will also debut an 8-film legacy section during its second half, showcasing titles that represent Sundance's tradition of bold narratives. Little Miss Sunshine, which premiered at Sundance in 2006, will return with its filmmakers and several cast members, including a grown-up Abigail Breslin. Other selections include House Party and American Dream from the 1990 festival, Mysterious Skin from 2004, and Half Nelson from 2006. Additional titles will be announced soon. Throughout the festival, organizers will host events celebrating the mission Robert Redford envisioned when he founded Sundance. Nine says many longtime attendees and industry veterans are planning to come to Park City for the festival's final year in Utah.
And I think that's been the most heartening thing is that just talking to producers, filmmakers, veterans who've been coming, industry veterans who've been coming for years, I think we are all really wonderfully touched by the fact that everybody wants to be there. And that's what we're hearing consistently in all the conversations that we have.
The 2026 Sundance Film Festival returns to Park City for a final time, January 22nd to February 1st. Single film tickets for in-person and online screenings go on sale January 14th. Limited quantities of select passes and packages remain on sale. You can find the film festival lineup and details online at kpcw.org. Canyons Village development will soon climb farther up the ski hill. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the ski area's developer wants taxing authority to make it happen.
The master developer of Canyons Village has applied for a public infrastructure district, or PID, a financial tool growing in popularity among Utah developers. If Summit County gives the go-ahead, Talisker Corporation's subsidiary TCFC would be allowed to raise money on the bond market like governments do. Cash from selling bonds would finance development within PID boundaries and would be paid back by taxes within those boundaries. The Summit County Council is scheduled to vote on whether to allow the PID December 17th. According to the meeting notice, the PID would include both the Upper High Mountain Road and West Willow Draw areas, as well as the canyon's uppermost public parking lots. Canyon stands to almost double its size since it had only built about half the square footage it's entitled to as of a couple years ago. Snyderville Basin Planning Commission staff reports explain more about what's next for High Mountain Road and West Willow Draw. High Mountain Road currently ends at the Apex Condominiums between the Red Pine and Sunrise Gondolas, but true to its name, High Mountain will be extended up the hill along with more multifamily residential homes. The area known as West Willow Draw is currently home to a snowcat warehouse and some golf course holes, visible to riders of the Orange Bubble Express. A mix of detached and multifamily homes are allowed on parcels to the north of Willow Draw Road, according to a county staff report. On the south side, just before the warehouse, TCFC is allowed to develop another hotel and conference center. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.